Call this meeting the Judiciary Committee to order. Members and staff, this is our first remote hearing of the special session. We are live streaming, and before we get started, I'd like to go over a few things before we start official business. First, we are holding this remote hearing pursuant to House Rule 10.01 passed on the floor March 26, 2020, which allows for remote hearings to take place during the peacetime emergency. The rule that we passed has a sunset provision of January 31st, 2021. Quick review of the hearing procedure, since it has been a few weeks since we've done this. You're defaulted to mute. Please keep yourself on mute when you're not voting or speaking. You can hold on your space bar to become unmuted. If you're on your computer, you can unmute yourself in the bottom left portion of your screen, or you can turn off your camera there as well. Committee staff can mute and unmute you, and we'll assist when we move to voting. If you've called in, you have to hit star six to unmute. If you want to speak, use the raise your hand function on the bottom of your screen, and you can click on participants. Committee staff will recognize the hand and will take your hand down when you're marked on the list, and the committee administrator will let me know who's on the list. If you are on the phone, hit star nine to raise your hand, or email Rachel Ganani or Jenna Mouse. Thank you for being patient. We're going to be taking breaks periodically to make sure we don't miss anything. After consultation with the Republicans, we were doing a procedural motions, approval of minutes by a voice vote. We will continue to roll call each vote that refers a bill to the General Register or another committee. And as is always the case, any member may request a roll call on any vote. I have been notified that a quorum is present. The clerk will call the roll to verify attendance.
Chair Lesh.
Present.
Representative Moeller.
Present.
Representative Scott.
Present.
Representative Albright.
Present.
Representative Barr.
Present.
Representative Cantrell.
Present.
Representative Carlson. Representative Carlson. Representative Considine.
Present.
Representative Hassan. Representative Hassan. Representative Herr.
Present.
Representative Johnson.
Present.
Representative Liebling.
Present.
Representative Lucero.
Yes.
Representative Mariani.
Present.
Representative Knorr.
Present.
Representative O'Neill.
Present.
Representative Robbins. Present. Representative Zhang.
Here, here.
Okay, I'll assume that we're concluded with the roll call. Today, members, we've got, I don't have a list now of everyone present, but everyone's on, and apparently Representative Robinson's calling in from the bottom of Minnehaha Falls. We'll be hearing three bills, House File 76, Representative Mariani's Reclaiming Community Package. All three bills are from Representative Mariani, House File 77 and House File 78. The first bill that we have up is House File 76, Chair Mariani's Reclaiming Community Package. The relevant jurisdiction for this committee for that bill will be Article 2, Sections 1 through 4. And we have two amendments for that. The motion on this will be to re-refer to Ways and Means. That will be the motion on all of these bills that we're hearing today. House File 77, Chair Mariani's Reforming Accountability Package. The relevant jurisdictions that we'll be taking up will be Section 8, lines 5.29 to 7.16. That motion would be to recommend to be re-referred to Ways and Means. And House File 78, our jurisdictions are Sections 1 and 6, lines 1.14 to 2.21 and 5.1 to 5.15. There will be an amendment presented by Rep. Senator Mahler regarding the Critical Incident Review Board, as well as an amendment from Rep. Senator Noor. And the motion will be to recommend to be re-referred to Ways and Means. The first matter that we have up will be the approval of minutes of May 4th, 2020. So Rep. Senator Mahler has moved the minutes of May 4th. Any discussion? Hearing no discussion, all in favor of Rep. Senator Mohler's motion, signify by saying aye.
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 All opposed, say no. The motion prevails, and the minutes of May 4th, 2020 are approved. The first bill that we have up is from Chair Mariani. We will be taking up this bill until approximately 10:23 p.m., just so folks are aware. Chair Mariani has gone through all these bills. We had an eight-hour hearing on Saturday that discussed all of these. So we will stick strictly to our sections per our jurisdiction, and we will be sticking to the areas as discussed about our jurisdiction areas, essentially. But Chair Mariani moves that House File 76 be recommended to be re-referred to the Ways and Means Committee, and we'll be discussing, as I stated, Article 2, Section 1 to 4, data practice modifications for peace officers and repeal of statute limitations for civil proceedings against peace officers. We'll be discussing an author's amendment and an amendment to that amendment for the data collection and post-reform bill. So that's where we're at. Representative Mari, Chair Mariani, did you want to go ahead and proceed?
Thank you, Chairman Lesh, and thank you, members, for being here today. I'll try to be very brief so we can focus in on amendments and questions. We're here in special session, particularly in this community, to focus on a horrible event that happened three weeks ago now, with the killing of George Floyd, an African-American man, at the hands of a Minneapolis police officer, a state-licensed professional. Frankly, in my opinion and opinion of many people, including a large swath of the public, not only an unacceptable, horrific outcome, but also one that is looking all too familiar in terms of the dynamics of police killings involving African American men. Not only here in the state, but across the nation as well. We just had another incident a couple days ago in Atlanta, and that community is painfully responding, just as our communities here in Minnesota responded in pain and in anguish and of course, in outrage. And I believe many of our colleagues here believe that we need to respond not only for the obvious, simple, if you will, policy responses to the event that happened. So things like, state regulating of chokeholds, for instance, but also responding in systemic ways, understanding that all our systems in all walks of life have a direct impact on the outcomes that result from the exercise of our duties. And so The bill before you, these bills are meant to both be specific about particular things, but also are meant to drive systemic change. And the provisions are all meant to work with one another, therefore, synergy in order to really be transformative. So the provision before you that we'll be talking particularly today in terms of data collection and regulatory reform is actually, for the most part, a provision that this committee heard last year in House File 2709 in regards to the Pulse Board, and the use of licensing to drive greater knowledge awareness and accountability for when there is wrongdoing. Unfortunately, even though we passed that provision, the other body saw it in their lack of wisdom not to do so. And worse, members not even to engage in the conversation, not even to have a hearing. We're hoping that the events today and the voice of the people of Minnesota are clear so that both our bodies, in fact, act. So there's some familiarity, therefore, then, with the provision before us. And Mr. Chair, so therefore, at this point, I do have an amendment that speaks directly to that provision. And so I would then move the A1 amendment to be before us.
Sure. The Chair Mariani has moved the A1 amendment. Did you want to specifically describe the amendment, what it does, Chair Mariani?
Mr. Chair, yes, I will. And again, this is the provision that we mostly, most of the provision rather, we covered last year in a long hearing in committee. But what this does is it basically, I would argue, reclaim the power of our state's Peace Officer Standards Training Board, which is our licensing board. So this is about a strategy of using our licensing board the way licensing boards are used pretty powerfully in other walks of life to regulate the behavior of individuals, to have clear accountability for such behavior, and then also to collect data on behavior so that we can constantly adjust our licensing requirements, our training requirements, as well as to hold individuals accountable for wrongdoing. So the goals here is to then increase the skills and service of our police officers, particularly in terms of police community relations, and to create a process for continuous improvement based on data and analysis, and then also to create a powerful way in which to have the Pulse Board exercise strong authority to discipline individuals licensed through the licensing process and work with those local elected, or rather those local law enforcement units to make sure there's accountability with in regards to discipline issues. So there's a number of, as we talked about last year, there's a process by which data, which frankly, members, is already public data. There's a process by which data will be directed from our local law enforcement units to the Pulse Board, and then a process by which the data is used for the purposes that I mentioned earlier. What's different this year in this proposal relative to the one that we saw last year, although still consistent with it, is the creation of a council within the Pulse Board itself. That council then is the one that will be the recipient of that data. There still is the existence, the calling forth of a contractual agreement with an independent body to be able to do the research, do the deep dive of research into the data. That body will be, and we've got an amendment to an amendment that we'll talk about in a second, that body will be, will operate within our state's data privacy responsibilities for government entities with a few small exceptions, and I can explain that as well. So that body, that independent body, will do analysis that would then flow back to this council, which then will work that that analysis of data on peace officer discipline issues to then issue recommendations to the full board. That body will also, that council, will also make determination if there's a need for intervention on the part of the state, including discipline action, and will powerfully set that forward. And if the Pulse Board disagrees with that, then the Pulse Board would step in, and the board itself would step in and overturn, you know, that discipline action. So the idea here, members, is to create a rigorous process with full transparency that requires our community within the Pulse Board to explain to the public its actions relative to discipline issues of peace officers.
Chair Marion, why don't we do this? Because I'd like us to explain the amendment to the amendment, but Representative O'Neill has a question right now. Could we, Representative O'Neill, is okay with you if Chair Marion, if we go ahead and move and explain the amendment first before you ask your question, or do you have your question now?
It can pertain to both. Thank you.
Okay. Well, why don't we do that then? Go ahead, ask your question, Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Chair Mariani, when we were discussing this in that very long hearing on Saturday, Nami brought out a particular point that I found quite interesting, and I'm not sure if you've incorporated her comments into this amendment. Maybe you could let us know, as the committee and the public know, have you incorporated into this amendment what kind of training, when, and by whom that officer was trained, so we get a sense as to, you know, particular, you know, each officer receives slightly different training. So it would be interesting to see when they got training, by whom, and what that type of training was. Is that incorporated into your amendments?
Well, and Chair Mariani, I don't think this pertains to the issue areas that we're going to be talking about, but go ahead. If you got a yes or no answer on that, go ahead and give it.
Mr. Chair, no, not directly, although I think that's a powerful concept.
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, as we move this iteration forward, and we'll be hearing this again in public safety shortly, I would ask that you would at least consider that, because that seems to be pretty powerful information. If we're looking at, you know, trends, I know that you had a warrior style part of this bill. We won't be talking about that here, but I think that that would be an important part to know, you know, where is the training from, how long ago. I've heard a lot of different things from folks across the state as to watching what happened to George Floyd and saying they were never trained in that fashion. They don't understand why he was doing that. So anyway, I think it's very pertinent to this particular section, but maybe not this committee, but we can talk about it again in public safety.
Thank you. Chair Mariana, did you want to, because you did explain that A1, but if you could just go ahead and move to the A6 amendment to the amendment so we can get that on, and then move on to the primary amendment.
Very well, Mr. Chair. I would then move the A6 amendment to the amendment.
Okay. And can you briefly explain that A6, what it does to A1?
Mr. Chair, members, there's three or four major provisions within this. The first provision comes from the administration for the executive branch to clearly identify that research organization, just to identify it by its function, that it'll be monitoring data, compiling a report, and providing notice. And frankly, that's the area where Representative O'Neill's inquiry, I think, could fit in really neatly because of the data regarding training. Then the second provision is a provision that comes from NCOLGE, and I always have a hard time remembering what NCOLGE means. I write it down and I forget it, but it's a watchdog group that watchdogs data, the exercise of our Data Privacy Act relative to government activities. They made some very helpful recommendations regarding the difference between storing and maintaining data. And then, this is vitally important, they then offered a suggestion of relative to Chapter 13. So this is our Data Privacy Act. And one of the things that it does is that it makes, it creates a process by which data can be shared with the public on the part of government entities. And so this is about making sure that the data being collected here is subject to Chapter 13. It makes the organization then, the research organization in particular, to function as a government entity relative to Chapter 13. Except, and what we're doing with the amendment, we're carving out an exception here. The exception is in regards to information about an individual officer's data and about letters, notices sent to that officer's employer, to their CLIO. And the reason why we want to do that, frankly, members, we're trying to strike a really powerful, important balance here. It's not our intention, to put it dramatically, to endanger a particular police officer, you know, to be identified in such a way. We don't need to do that in order to get at, in order to achieve our goal of addressing excessive use of force with police officers. We want to work within the system, but we want to make it a rigorous system. And so there's no need to identify, no need to embarrass, but there may be a need often, quite frankly, and this partially gets, I think, a Representative O'Neill's question as well, partially or often what we need is to get help to that individual. And so there's no need to publicly air when it comes to noticing that there's a notice process by which once we looked at the data, we're using a unique identifier for that officer. There's a communication back to the CLIO, the chief law enforcement officer, that, hey, we're seeing this, you know, so the council with the research and the analysis done by the research group can say to the CLIO, we're seeing this pattern. We're seeing these things happen. We think we want you to intervene. So the point here is to help officers who need help. Obviously, when it comes to wrongdoing data, that's a whole nother thing. That's about holding people accountable. The other part of the amendment seeks to provide, frankly, to prevent harm that officers may do, not only to others, but also to themselves, quite frankly, things like suicide. And so as part of the data, when we're picking up patterns through the analysis of the behavior of this officer's officer identified through that unique identifier, so it's not his or her name, if there's a pattern that's being picked up in terms of you know, repeated excessive use of force in a particular way, et cetera, those are red flags. Some people would argue that those red flags should have been there, for instance, for the officer currently charged, one of the officers currently charged with the killing of George Floyd. And the question the public is asking, why are we intervening? And the point here is that we should be intervening absolutely. And the intervention is to prevent harm. Is to prevent harm to the public, but it also means to prevent self-harm on the part of the officer. And then the last part of the amendment, Mr. Chair, you know, we've been texting back and forth, and both of us are incredibly busy, so, you know, I defer to your call. This is the part that adds that review of discipline behavior and patterns to the CLIO, him or herself as well, and not just to the rank and file. And so the analysis then would be what is the pattern of behavior and outcomes that may be troublesome in terms of use of force, excessive use of force, et cetera, and recognizing that accountability also flows, may also flow to the CLIO, him or herself. So this provision would add that to the language before you. There's a problem on line 117 where we had a one-word error, where the word to is not the right word. The word should be on. So this is about recommendations on or about making the CLIO the object, not just making the CLIO, hey, we're going to report to you, you know, that, you know, there's there are issues of discipline in regards to your management that you should be aware of. So so I leave it to you, Mr. Chair, and to this committee to see if we can make a verbal change to that, or perhaps we can find another way to resolve that particular issue.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this is a one-word change. I don't know whether it's technical or not, but it is one word, and I don't suspect that the GOP would have an objection to it, but I did not ask Chair Scott ahead of time or any of the Republicans. So is there any strong objection to that one-word modification in the A6? Chair Scott, I'm kind of calling you out. I didn't tell you I was going to call
you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. No, I don't have any objections to the one-word change.
Okay, thank you. Then let's vote on that oral modification to be clear, too. If you, Chair Mariano, if you could just briefly state specifically on the line which word we're changing and to what.
Mr. Chair, members, it would be on line 117 of the amendment to the amendment. After the word recommendations, to strike the word to, T-O, and insert the word on, O-N.
With no objection, that is the oral motion to the A6 amendment. We will take an oral vote on this. All in favor of on line 1.17 on the A6 amendment, changing the word to on, signify by saying aye.
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 Aye. Aye.
All opposed, say no. The motion does pass. The A6 is orally amended accordingly. Members, now we will vote on the A6 amendment to the A1 amendment. All in favor of the A6 amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed, signify by saying no. The motion does prevail. The A1 amendment is amended. Now, members, we are back at the A1 amendment to the bill. In order to put the bill in the shape as discussed by the author, we will take an oral vote on that. All in favor of the A1 amendment as amended, signify by saying aye.
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 All opposed, say no.
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 Mr. Chair, we didn't have a discussion.
That is correct. That is correct. We are in the middle of a roll call. That said, I will ask the clerk to not, I will not declare a result on the vote because Representative O'Neill, you're correct. Go ahead, Representative O'Neill.
Sorry, I don't know what's happening with technology. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a more broad question regarding this amendment. And Chair Mariani, I've noticed that there are several different boards and commissions and such in these bills. And it's rather confusing, if I'm going to be very honest. And I'm wondering if you could explain how this particular one fits in with the multitude of additional advisory boards and councils that are being added in these packages of bills. It's just very confusing. And I think the public and this committee would benefit from having an understanding as to how is this different from some of the other ones that you're working on, and what purpose does this particular one serve in comparison to all the other ones that you're trying to add?
Well, Representative O'Neill, it was my assumption that you wanted to speak to the amendment. I mean, I this strikes me as a question more about the bill as amended overall. Could we take the vote on the amendment and then have this conversation on the bill as amended?
We could, Mr. Chair. My I guess the basis for my vote on this particular amendment would be how, I guess the answer to that question, which is why I ask it now before we take the vote, because I'm still undecided as to how do I want to vote on this particular amendment, because it's, there's just quite frankly so many advisory councils and boards sprinkled within all of these bills. And it's hard for me to understand exactly how they all fit together. And if I had clarity on that, I would know how I want to vote on this particular amendment. And, okay. And that's how it relates to this amendment.
Go ahead, Chair Mariani.
Mr. Chair and Representative O'Neill, and I welcome the question and delighted to try to give you a concise answer to it. So in this provision, this is about creating a entity within the Pulse Board itself. That entity will be populated by a diverse stakeholder group that involves law enforcement as well as citizens. And then there's a prescribed way or a prescription of who those would be. So we've got the representatives from the four councils of color. We'll have representatives from disability communities. We'll have representatives from advocates for survivors of sexual assault. We'll have, I'm looking through quickly here, individuals who have experience with civilian review boards of law enforcement. They'll be joined with a representative from, actually the executive director of the Sheriff's Association, of the Chiefs of Police, of the Police and Peace Officers Association, of the executive director, him or herself, of the Pulse Board, and then the superintendent of the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension. So that group then is tasked specifically with driving our licensure system and our accountability system to enhance community relations, to enhance the incredibly long now studied and often practiced growth of public safety, which involves powerful connections with licensed law enforcement officers and excuse me, community problem solvers, which could be a broad array of folks in the mental health field, for instance, folks who are knowledgeable about racial and cultural communities and groups. And then that group's task is to work with the data analysis that the research group that we contract with will be receiving from our individual law enforcement entities. And we're talking about public data, data that's already public. The issue, we talked about this last year, right? The issue is that in order to get a full picture of what that means in Minnesota, right now we would need to primarily be dependent on going to individual CLIOs to get that data. So this is a much more efficient system that allows us to have a strong, more real-time analysis and look at trends, outcomes relative to policing, especially relative to issues related to discipline. We spell what those are. We are particularly focused and interested in use of force. And then putting that analysis within the directive of this group to drive our reshaping, if you will, redirecting, reanimating our police culture and practices through licensing, consistent with aligning that towards stronger community relations practices and outcomes. That group, you know, that focuses heavily on that, that issues recommendations out to the Pulse Board within which it resides for the Pulse Board's then subsequent actions for making changes to the licensure. In addition, that group, by virtue of having that data, picking up patterns of either departments or individual officers, again, identified only through a special identifier, can then issue, will then issue discipline recommendations that if the Pulse Board itself disagrees with, the Pulse Board would have to take an affirmative step to not go through with those disciplinary actions. So this is a big reform. I believe it goes right to the core of what people want as they scratch their heads and wonder, wait a minute, we're collecting all this data, we're doing all this training, and we still have police officers killing black men in the state of Minnesota. So can we do, we should be doing things differently. It should be transparent. It should be directive in terms of wanting stronger relationships, strong relationships between our licensed peace officers and our community groups. So this group is distinct in that it drives that process inside the Pulse Board itself. And by doing that, then strengthening, I would argue, putting real muscle and moral clarity, much more so than we have now in the Pulse Board itself. I would finally add that it's the kind of proposal that as we interact with the Pulse Board, we know, I'm not saying they're supportive of this particular provision, but that we know that they it aligns with the direction in which that Pulse Board, those conversations are starting to go through. They're about to do a major audit with an outside independent auditor to walk through many of these same ideas of how do we use licensure as a way to drive outcomes under peace officers that align with Minnesota values.
Thank you. Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate your indulgence. That was fantastic. I just have a really small clarification question just to wrap my head around this new entity. You talked about the composition of the board, and I was trying to follow it, and I don't have it listed out, unfortunately, in front of me. That would have been helpful to me to see it, and I just, honestly, with all of this going so quickly and all of the meetings that we've had, I just haven't had the time to print out that particular document out of the, feels like, hundreds of pages. But that being said, my quick question is, if you could let me know, is it about 50-50 of sort of like the community folks versus like law enforcement post board? I kind of got lost in the long list. If you could let me know sort of the composition, just 50-50. And if they're going to be passing along recommendations, is that by majority vote? Is it just a simple majority like most committees? If you could answer those two questions.
Mr. Chair and Representative,
go ahead and do that, and then I do want us to move us along to the vote on the amendment itself. And remember, we're really trying to keep it as tight as we can into the provisions of the data. Go ahead, Chair Mariani.
Mr. Chair, Representative O'Neill, there will be five members from the broader law enforcement community. So that's the sheriffs, the superintendent of the BCA, rank and file. There will be four members from the state councils of color. These are state governmental units that exist to advise the legislature and the executive branch. They draw heavily from the communities themselves. And then there are, and they are appointed by the governor. The members of those entities are appointed by the governor. And then there are six members from a group of mental health advocates, of advocates for survivors of sexual assault, and individuals who have experience with law enforcement civilian review boards. And then as to the question of decision-making, you always have a habit of stumping me with questions that I'm, you know, you get into the detail. I can tell you that the organization of the entity itself is administered under Rule 15.059. I would have to get back about the actual decision-making, what that means for that. I think generally what it means is that the entity itself will make that determination of decision-making consistent with practices for how we organize these units in state government.
Okay, thank you. Let's move to the vote now on the amendment. All in favor of the...
Chair Lesh, I've had my hand raised to ask a question on this amendment.
Why don't you tell me what the question is first, Chair Johnson, because we can probably speak to it on the bill itself. What is your question going to be? Make it very brief, please.
My question is on lines 2.29. It specifically lists which groups of victim advocacy groups are on this board. We have a number of statewide groups that should have an opportunity to be on here.
Chair Johnson, you sit on Ways and Means, is that correct?
I do not sit on Ways and Means.
Okay, well, you sit on Public Safety.
That is correct.
That is a question not related to the data provisions that I had spelled out that this committee is going to be considering.
That is in the amendment.
I know it's in, I'm aware that it's in the amendment, but we're already 10 minutes past the provisions on the bill. Let me ask this. Chair Scott has a question as well, too. Chair Scott, does your question relate to those parameters as well?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My questions relate to the data provisions themselves.
Okay. Chair Johnson, I will permit a very narrow band question to Chair Mariani about this because we've already covered a lot of it with Representative O'Neill's question. So, Chair Mariani, can you answer Chair Johnson's question very briefly?
Mr. Chair and Representative Johnson, you're correct that we name those organizations as having members on this board. There's also more room. Following that, there's language of one member representing a community organization that organizes direct action campaign and appointed by the Commissioner of Human Rights. So we're trying to strike a balance of inclusiveness and inclusiveness within the very communities that are most at risk to police misconduct. And so part of that was demonstrated repeatedly, I would argue, with the killing of George Floyd, is that we're looking at communities of color. We're also looking at communities that communities of people that suffer sexual assault in our state. So I think it's a pretty powerful, strong collection of people that we've got here, and we're just trying to strike that balance of diversity and diversity within those that our data is telling us right now are often on the wrong end of police misconduct.
And Chair Mariani, I was just reminded that this provision is going to be up in Public Safety Act 2.
Yes.
Is that right? Okay.
Yes.
So Chair Johnson, you can ask your any other follow-up questions there.
Chair Lesh, we do not have this bill or this amendment in Public Safety. We have a different bill. So these provisions are going straight to Ways and Means. They're not going to be in Public Safety.
So there will be separate provisions in the Bill of Public Safety. Is that correct, Chair Mariani?
Correct. We're moving close through in a special session in order not to get frozen out before the clock runs out. And so we thought it was we know that there are judiciary issues that needed to be covered. So that's why this clause exists here.
Okay.
Yes, that is correct. But this provision on this amendment is not in Public Safety. It's not in the bill on Public Safety. That's why we need to vet this particular amendment thoroughly here. It's going straight to Ways and Means.
Chair Johnson, it will be, the language will be exactly the same in Public Safety with the exception of the A6. So yes, the same provision will be in there. You can take a vote on it whichever way you want. Chair Scott, is your question relating to the A1 amendment as amended? or to the bill itself on data practices?
Well, it's related to the data. And Mr. Chair, I understand, you know, you're under a time constraint here, but we do have legitimate questions here. And Chair Mariani, God love you, but your answers are really long and drawn out. So I would ask the chair, Chair Lesh, not to squelch our questions because the answers get really long and it doesn't fit into the time constraint. But my concern here is that once again, we have a bill before us that deals with data and a third party receiving that data in addition. But we have no provisions in here for audit trails, no provisions in here for role-based access. We don't know who specifically is going to be looking at this data. So we will not know if there's a data breach, who is responsible for it without that information. And it seems like I'm the one that brings that up every single time, and every single bill that we have, people even that are on this committee aren't putting that language into their bills. And so I would just ask Chair Mariani, it's not the right place to do it, but to add role-based access and create audit trails and have a report of those audit trails to the legislature as this bill moves to the to Ways and Means. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And Mr. Chair, Representative Scott, you have my word that I'll work on that, and I would appreciate your advice as we go forward.
Mr. Chair, this is Representative Sherwood. I have a question on Subdivision 3 of the amendment as amended.
Is that the data? Representative Lucero?
Correct. Data storage and access.
Go ahead, Representative Lucero.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Mariani, so the amendment to the amendment changed the on line 5.19, changed the word store to maintain and deleted the words on a secure server. And I'm just wondering if you can provide insight, please, as to why the word maintain was preferred over store, and what does the word maintain now mean? And why on a secure server was deleted? Where will this information now be maintained if not on a secure server, and why?
Mr. Chair and Representative Lucero, so this is the Minkology recommendation, certainly gets us into the weeds of the technology. My understanding is that if you're going to be using a cloud-based system, which is increasingly what we're doing, that the word store doesn't apply, that it's really about maintaining, because you're actually not storing the cloud-based, right? And then, therefore, also the secure server, you're not. There's no server that you're in control of. You're accessing a cloud-based service. That's my best non-tech. You're a far better tech guy than I am, but that's my understanding. And again, it comes from vetting from the Minkology group.
Mr. Chair, you're on mute.
Thank you. We'll now move to a vote on the A1 amendment as amended. All in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All opposed say no.
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 No. No.
The motion does prevail, and we are now on the bill as amended. So we've kind of gone through this exhaustively, but are there any other, and we're also about 12 minutes past our time on this, Chair Mariani. Was there any other commentary or testimony you wanted to offer on the bill as amended?
Mr. Chair, no, not at this time.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, I just had a follow-up to my previous question.
Representative Lucero.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Okay, so then I guess my concern is, if this information is going to be stored up in the cloud, what are the parameters around it to ensure the data is protected, as Representative Scott alluded to? So if it's now going to be maintained, but it's not going to be maintained on-prem, it's going to be up in the cloud, why don't we have language in there that says it's still the responsibility of the board, or what is the new term here called? Whatever the body is that's going to be collecting this information, while they may not be storing it up in the cloud, it's still their responsibility to do so securely. And I don't see any parameters around that responsibility falling on their shoulders. So I just don't think this is ready yet. I think it's moving so fast. We don't have the parameters to ensure that the information is protected regardless of where the information is physically going to be residing. I don't think it's ready for prime time. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, thank you. We do have some other items on here. Oops, one moment. There are a couple other amendments. There is the A2 amendment.
Mr. Chair, I would move the A2 amendment.
So Representative Herr, so you're moving Representative Herr's amendment?
Mr. Chair, yes.
Okay. So the A2 amendment, go ahead and explain the amendment, Chair Mariani.
Mr. Chair, this is actually, this removes a provision that I actually think we should try to keep in, but there are some technical challenges to it at this point. And so we're still trying to work those out. And so I didn't want to have something before us that isn't ready for prime time. This has to do with removing in a targeted way the Data Privacy Act governing Data Practices Act governing the sharing with the public the dismissal, the firing of a peace officer before there's an opportunity for that peace officer to go through a process. And this has to do with the mayor of Minneapolis, a police chief immediately firing the four individuals who killed George Floyd. I personally think that was a good move because I think that the intent was to send a strong message to the public about the seriousness of our elected officials to not tolerate that incredible level of wrongdoing. Whether it had the effect that it was intended to or not is debatable. However, in the process of attempting to alleviate public angst and outrage over the killing, the horrible killing of Mr. Floyd, there was a violation, as I understand it, of the Data Privacy Act, which then means that those individuals are eligible for basically to receive payment for having their Data Privacy Act rights so violated. So the attempt here was to create a way in which in these kind of circumstances that would not apply. And part of it is to avoid then sending the wrong message. I don't think the Data Privacy Act ever intended to be a payment for individuals doing something as horribly awful as what those four are accused in court of doing. And so we're still trying to work out what the right parameters of how to do this. It's pretty tricky and technical. We couldn't quite figure it out, and so we backed off of it at this point. But we would back off.
Any questions for Chair Mariani about this? Okay. Chair Mariani, who did you talk to that gave you indication that there were problems with the language? Or tricky, I think you said? I think you're frozen.
Chair Lesh, this is Representative Herr. I can respond if Chair Mariani is frozen. We actually did get feedback from a number of entities. One of them was from the League of Minnesota Cities. And they specifically cited that they believed that some of this information was already covered under the data practices language, and that there were actually different sections in which, if this was to be included, it should be included in the personnel data statute instead of where we had put it. And so we did get some opinions, and then also regarding the effective date and number of other things that were in the provision. So we just decided to pull it because of that.
Okay. It's not the first time the League of Minnesota Cities has voiced strenuous opposition to the Data Practices Act, and I usually don't follow their lead, but that's the first time I've heard any objection from them about it. Any other questions from members of the committee about the A2 amendment? Seeing none, then all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Mr. Chair.
Oh, I'm sorry.
There are several hands up.
I'm sorry. I did just see Yes, I did just see that on my feed. Okay, Chair Scott, go ahead.
Well, I don't know that I was the first one to have my hand up. And with mine, I'll save it till just the actual bill passage, but I did note that other members had their hands up. So
thank you. Go ahead. You go first, Chair Scott. I just didn't see the other questions.
No, I'll save my comments till final passage, Mr. Chair.
Okay, Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just trying to follow this whole train of thought. I'm trying really hard to understand what Chair Mariani and Representative Herr are trying to accomplish. Am I to understand that this amendment then basically makes lawful what was done illegally by Mayor Frey because he fired all four and revealed the data about them, revealed their names and such? Is that what we're trying to do? So help me, just a quick yes or no. Is that the understanding of what we're doing here, is we're basically now trying to change statute to conform with what was already done by Mayor Frey, violating data practices?
Mr. Chair and Mr. Chair and Representative O'Neill, what we are doing is striking an effort to respond to that. So current law will continue to hold if we adopt this amendment. We were trying to do the right thing, quite frankly. You know, and the right thing, members, is that the public is tired of paying for the wrongdoing that police officers commit on individual citizens and loved ones in this state. We were trying to avoid that. We run into a problem, technical problem on it. And so we're saying at this point, you know what, we're not going to go there. So that's what this amendment does. You know, Mr. Chair, Representative O'Neill, you know, I truly appreciate you wrestling with legislation. We all do that. But I have to state, there's nothing unclear about this package. There's nothing unclear about what we're attempting to do. Like any piece of legislation, there's always issues that we need to raise in terms of technical things that we don't think about. That's what this committee is really good at. But that's different than consistently sending a message out to the public that somehow there's something terribly not ready, not wrong, terribly wrong about all of these proposals. All I could tell you is that it's that kind of discussion among ourselves that leads us to do nothing. And when we do nothing, people like George Floyd get killed. And so I just have to respond really forcefully at this point that I'll engage in the conversation, but insinuating somehow that none of this stuff is really serious or ready or carefully thought out, you know, it just flies in the face of reality.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, may I please quickly respond?
Representative O'Neill.
Chair Mariani, I am wrestling with this because these are 22 individual bills that have been put together into three packages. It came very, very quickly. I haven't even had an opportunity to read through everything. And you know that I read everything and review everything. And I'm telling you that this is a lot. And this is quick. And this is vast change, which I understand that that is what you want. And I know you have had the opportunity to review and think about all of this, but all of us on all of these committees in this time frame have not, and the public has not. So if that's offensive to you, I am very sorry. But I am not making this up that I'm having a hard time following what you are doing. And I follow and track and spend hours and hours doing this work. You know I do. And I'm telling you, I'm having a difficult time following what you're doing. And if that's offensive to you, I apologize.
Thank you. We also have Representative Lucero and Albright. Representative Lucero.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted a quick follow-up to what I heard based on what the A2 here. That's the first time I'm hearing that, and I just wanted to clarify if I understood Representative O'Neill correctly. Were and was there information released publicly in violation of present law, and we're trying to now change the laws to allow for such an action in the future?
Mr. Chair, and Representative Lucero, the amendment before you is to back out of trying to do something about that situation.
Lucero.
Okay. Well, I, as we spent 8 hours on Saturday and for many days prior to that, we all know that this is a tragedy that we definitely want to have good solutions for. But we also want to make sure that we're not violating the process, the due process, the law, and we don't want to, quote unquote, do something that might have other unintended consequences. And so I'm back to the data provisions, and I'll wait until final passage, but the protecting information is incredibly important to me, and it's incredibly important to Minnesotans. And if we have to act so fast that we just can't get proper language in here for protections, and now we're going to delete provisions in the A2 amendment, yikes, members, yikes.
Okay, Representative Albright.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Mariani, you and I share the strongest of desires of making sure that people are accountable to their actions. But I also firmly believe that you and I share the strongest desire to be transparent and have the best dialogue possible over what could be considered watershed legislation. I know that the chair has made provision for this committee to reconvene at a later time yet today. Chair Lesh and Representative Mariani, our caucus and the members on this committee from the GOP side have nothing more at stake than to make sure that the public as well as the members of this body feel that we have properly and most strongly vetted these to assure our constituents that we have done our job and that they can feel comfortable with the legislation moving forward. And so with that in mind, I please understand that the dialogue and the lines of questioning, though they be narrow, to adhere to the provisions that this committee needs to abide by, I would certainly hope that the chair would avail the GOP caucus members of their questions, knowing that we have, I believe, a date and time certain of 8 o'clock tonight that we could reconvene. And I would hope the chair would avail us up to that so that we can take the time to look at each one of these in a proper fashion until we have provided clarity to ourselves and those from the public listening in. Thank you, Mr. Chair, for your
Thank you, Representative Albright.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to ask for a roll call, please.
Roll call has been
on the A2.
On the A2. Okay, seeing no other questions on the
Chair Lesh, this is Representative Herr. I just need to, I want to help provide just a little bit of clarity around this A2 amendment before I can
Representative Herr.
I just want to be really clear that what Rep. Mariani said was correct, that we just want to make sure that what we do is correct. And actually, this is doing what all of you are asking for, to remove language that could be potentially construed as being political. So I just want to provide a little bit of clarification that this provision was actually put in to just provide clarification for status of complaint, because in the current language now, it speaks to the final disposition. And because somebody being fired before the final disposition could be viewed as violating this, even though the action was correct, we just want to make sure that there's clarity in this, and the fact that we were hoping to provide clarity on the status of complaint sort of led to other concerns about that, is this already covered? So it's potentially already covered right now in the current language of data practices. So we're not really changing anything or trying to make this bill try to do something that it wasn't intended to do. And maybe Chair Lesh could provide clarification, because this originally was his bill, and that the fact that the effective date being specifically what it was stated, that maybe he could provide clarification on that piece of it. But for us, it was specifically trying to ensure that cities do not unnecessarily pay out claims to officers who have been fired and rightfully fired. And again, just remember, this is just to clear up what the status of complaint is, which is already referred to in the early part of this bill, which we are not changing. So rest assured that this is not to be created. And this was being removed so that we don't create that perception of making it political when it really is necessary to clarify language. I just wanted to offer that up to everyone for peace of mind as to where, what this bill, how it came to be and why it's being removed now.
Thank you for that, Representative Furrett. And I'm afraid I don't understand one portion. You said that a couple of times that this was intended to remove the perception that this could be political. And I'm not sure I understand that. How did you mean again?
Well, because Rep. O'Neill mentioned that we're trying to create this provision and to just protect Mayor Fry and their decisions and to retroactively try to protect them. And I'm trying to say that we are not, which is why we're removing this, and that looks like it's being political, that we're protecting an individual or a city. And that's not what we're trying to do. We were originally trying to create clarification of status of complaint with this particular bill and to also provide help with ensuring that there's clarity around final disposition and what that means with bad practices. So that's so when I say that it's for it not to be political, it's that was why we pulled this, so that wouldn't be the impression.
Well, yeah, Rep. Sifer, I'm not sure I can offer any illustration as to your motivations or anyone else's motivations for it. I know I've had this provision similar to this bill for several years, particularly including after the death of Jamar Clark, when a St. Paul police officer gave advice on Facebook of how to run over or strike pedestrians on the Lake Street Bridge and get away with it without getting charged. That officer was a St. Paul officer at the time, 2015, and was going to be fired, but nothing could be said about it because of a violation, data practices violation. So when Mayor Fry made the decision to summarily dismiss these four officers, I was told by experts that this, in fact, was a violation. So whether it's Mayor Fry or any other mayor, if folks have a desire to either protect him or oppose him, was certainly not my motivation when I offered this bill in 2015. He wasn't even in office in 2015. And there are other cities that have gone through this as well, too. So I can't ascribe to anyone else's motivations for offering it or for withdrawing an amendment like this. It is what it is. I do have concerns that officers now are going to get paid. Officers who shouldn't get paid are now going to get paid.
Right.
And, you know, concerns of the League of Minnesota Cities notwithstanding, the League of Minnesota Cities has never been a particular friend of Chapter 13, the Data Practices Act, ever that I can recall. So they certainly would not be my go-to resource for advice on this. Nonetheless, I don't see any other comments on this, but...
Mr. Chair, I just have one quick question.
Well, Reps. Lucero, we're going to move a vote. A roll call has been requested. It better be quick.
It is quick, Mr. Chair. Does this provision apply to only police, or does it apply for all public employees? Removing the provision.
The language that I see it is that it's going to be quick. I'm sorry. it applies to be the police. It's going to just be just the police as I read it, unless anyone can correct me on that. It's just the police. Okay, there being no other discussion. A roll call has been requested. The committee legislative assistant will take the roll. Chair votes nay.
Representative Mueller.
Aye.
Representative Scott.
No.
Representative Albright.
No.
Representative Barr.
No.
Representative Cantrell. Representative Carlson. Representative Considine.
Aye.
Representative Hassan.
Yes.
Representative Herr.
Yes.
Representative Johnson.
No.
Representative Liebling.
Aye.
Representative Lucero.
No.
Representative Mariani.
Yes.
Representative Noor.
Aye.
Representative O'Neill.
No.
Representative Robbins.
No.
Representative Zhang.
Yes.
Cantrell votes yes. Sorry, I was muted.
And Ms. Mouse, Representative Carlson has indicated he votes aye on it as well, both with a thumb up on the record and in various messages I've gotten from other people. On a vote of 10 ayes and 9 nays, the motion does prevail and the A2 amendment is adopted. Now, we have testifiers in support of Representative Vang's bill to discuss Article 2, Sections 2 through 4. We are going to move past those testifiers unless there are questions for them. We have Tashira Garraway, and this is regarding the extending the statute of limitations for certain actions by peace officers and tolling the civil statute of limitations. So are there questions about that provision or comments from committee members about the bill as amended? I don't see any, I know there will be, I'm not gonna move on here to a vote, because I know folks have questions.
Chair Lesh.
Okay, I do see Representative O'Neill has a question. Go ahead, Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question is, so we're eliminating the statute of limitations, which is a very far-reaching change. Was there consideration to maybe just double the statute of limitations from 4 to 6 so it's more in line with other places in statute? Why are we eliminating the statute of limitations and instead of making them more in line with other portions of statute? And then the last question I have, because I know you want us to wrap it up, is, we have the sexual assault working group that will be rewriting the entire chapter of criminal sexual conduct statutes. And so I see this change actually better serve to be a part of that working group, as we're still rewriting the entire chapter of criminal sexual conduct statutes. When you talk about anyone in a position of authority misusing that and committing a sexual assault. And so my question is, why are we not allowing the already formed working group to work on that in regards to a police officer and a sexual assault instead of, what we're doing today? I'm really confused as to why we're doing that. Both, why are we eliminating and not just maybe doubling it so it's more in line with other parts of statute? And why are we kind of usurping what the working group's already doing? My two questions.
Thank you. So either Representative Vang, or you can ask Ms. Garraway to answer as well, too. What's your choice?
I'm not sure if Ms. Garraway is here, but I can answer briefly. If we were to just double the statute of limitations, what the testifiers have shared with us is that there's been cases where police officers have prolonged the investigation to the point where they are unable to meet or unable to really go after after the investigation. So the statute of limitations really starts when the claims are made, and they have testifiers have shared with us that police officers can prolong the investigations, and the investigations have to close before they can start their civil claims. So that is the reason why we decided to fully remove the statute of limitations. So there continues to be a pathway towards justice for those families.
Representative O'Neill.
Can you point to any other part of our statute when you're talking about a civil case like that that has no statute of limitations? I know in criminal, obviously, murder cases, there's no statute of limitations, but there are clear lines in the sand, so to speak, in the rest of the statute. Can you point to anything else that I'm not thinking of that this would fall in line with? I just can't think of anything that has no statute of limitations other than a murder charge.
Well, we did that, Representative O'Neill, we did that with child sex abuse in 2014. There was a window, of course, that closed and then extended out to 30 years. But there was temporarily a no statute of limitations provision there in the window. But I don't know of any others that we've done. Representative Vang, if you know, you can answer, or you can defer to research as well.
I will defer to research if that's something I'm not too informed about.
Okay, Mr. Johnson or Ms. Mullins. I'm sorry, I don't know which ones.
I'm here and I can handle that.
Go ahead, Chair, Mr. Johnson.
Ben Johnson. There are, I believe, two statutes of limitations that are in statute right now that set no statute of limitations. One is in the sexual assault. And again, this is related to civil statutes, not criminal statutes. So in the bill language, in fact, if you look at it, at page 7, line 14, the current statute is reprinted there, and a claim alleging sexual abuse can be brought at any time in the case of an alleged abuse of an individual who's under the age of 18. There is also, I think the language is in the bill related to an act that is determined to be intentional murder. That also has no statute of limitations for a civil action. I can see if I can find that language in the bill and chime back in, but I'll let you.
So like the OJ wrongful death situation, there would be no civil statute of limitations on that. Is that accurate?
So, Mr. Chair, it would have to be based on an allegation of intentional murder as opposed to another wrongful death sort of claim. But yeah, if the allegation is murder and that can be sustained, then there should be no statute of limitations running.
Okay, Representative O'Neill.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate the feedback. The only thing that wasn't addressed is we are dealing with the sexual assault part for a position of authority within the working group. And I'm wondering if you'd be willing to just allow them to continue their work and look at it as a full package as we rewrite the whole chapter of criminal sexual conduct instead of dealing with it here. Would that be a consideration?
Representative Vang.
That can be a consideration. That's something we decided to add a sexual assault provision on this bill because we thought it could make this bill stronger. But I'm also open to it too as well, and that could be something we can discuss further about. I'm not going to make any commitments on that.
Okay, thank you, Representative. Any other questions?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Lucero.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Before you go, Representative Lucero, we have you, Representative Albright, and Representative Moeller. So, and after that, we'll move to a vote on the bill as amended. And not just, I suppose now is as good a time as any to do it. Members are going to go to 11:45 because session starts at noon. And if we're not completed with the other bills, we will recess to the call of the chair. But we'll be a little bit of dance because public safety meets at 2:30 and we share 9-member crossover between these two committees. So we can't very well meet at the same time as them. And then we'll meet tonight if we have to as well, too. That said, Representative Sarah, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And my question would be to any who would want to answer. And as I've continued to look through the bill as amended now, I see that there's other language in there regarding safeguards and personally identifiable information. And I guess the question is, why was the decision made to not be more prescriptive in protecting private information as we have in this committee in a multitude of other bills? Why is it so vague in this particular case? And in particular, I'm looking at line 7.11 of the A1 amendment, and it says that safeguards to protect personally identified information need to be incorporated. But what it doesn't, that's it, that's all it says. So what are those safeguards? Who comes up with those safeguards? What are the standards? How do we verify those standards are in place? How will there be audits of to ensure a continued measures that those safeguards are in place, and that those safeguards that whoever comes up with them and implements them were even correct to begin with? Again, it's just so vague, and I'm wondering, why is it written this way?
Who is that question to, Representative Lucero?
Anybody who chooses to answer, I suppose.
Okay, well, I guess I defer to the author first. Chair Mariana, do you want to take a stab at it or defer to someone?
Mr. Chair and members, there was a lot of attention paid to protecting data privacy. We made the research group, I thought we already voted on this bill, but we made the research group subject to, Chapter 13. I suppose, and Representative Scott did earlier raise, the idea of audits, et cetera. We can certainly do that. I suppose we can be incredibly super prescriptive about all of this work. I think part of the reason we're not generally is because we have existing statutes like Chapter 13 that guide our actions. We have custom and usage in our governmental entities that tie to all that. I don't think anything that you're raising meets any kind of hostility or resistance, because I think we all share, I believe we do, all share a common desire for sound practices that respect the data privacy of all Minnesotans. And we have a rich history of doing that within all our government entities. So perhaps the answer is that at some point you can either put out a 1,000-page bill that overly prescribes all these procedures, or frankly, you fall back on both practice and the existing frameworks that we have with our data privacy laws in our state. And I suppose it's fair, as legislators, we can be as prescriptive as we want. There's sometimes, a downside to being overly prescriptive. But in terms of what you value, I think that we're on the same page.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess, and I appreciate that, Chair Mariani. The point that I'm raising is that we have been more prescriptive than we are with language in this case. So precedent is in this committee to have stronger language to ensure protections. But the thing that really raised my red flags was the, going back to whichever amendment it was, I think it was the A6 amendment, the amendment to the amendment. Going back to that, the language or the answer, I should say, of putting information up on the cloud and therefore we can dilute the language. We in the Data Practices and Personal Data Privacy Commission have had experience with the cloud being used as a mechanism to reduce public insight and reduce accountability and visibility. And so, again, if that's where data is going to go, that's okay. But that should not be a reason to not ensure. And that, what was that, a triple negative there? So we definitely should ensure that we as the committee are ensuring standards and accountability regardless of where the data is going to be housed, because the location of the data or the method by which data will be housed is independent from the accountability and responsibility to ensure that private data is protected. And that's, I guess, the point I'm trying to make is the language is very vague as to those protection mechanisms, especially in this case, as has been admitted, that information will be in the cloud. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. The last two comments we have from members are Representative Albright and Moeller. Go ahead, Representative Albright.
Are you calling on me, Mr. Chair?
Yes, I am, Representative Albright. Go ahead.
Mr. Chair, and this question goes back to a comment that you made maybe a few minutes ago with regard to public testifiers that you mentioned were available for questions. Quite honestly, I don't know the questions that I would ask of them until I hear their testimony. So is that, can we revisit that if they have points that they would like to make, or is it in this, for the sake of brevity during the course of the few minutes we have? Or I'm not trying to be contentious. I'm just trying to make sure that the public is available to these committees in a fashion that is appropriate so that we do not provide any appearance of exclusivity. So I'll just leave it at that, and if you could respond, sir.
Thank you, Representative Albright. The outside testifier that I had spoken of was Ms. Garraway. She was here to answer. My note said she was going to be here to answer questions about Representative Vang's portion of the bill. However, she's not here and not available, so Representative Vang answered those directly. Representative Moeller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just wanted to quick respond about the suggestions that the Statutory Reform Working Group for Sexual Assault handle this. I do know that Representative O'Neill has been really following that work, and I look forward to working with her next year if we're both reelected in getting some of those things across the finish line that the working group recommends. But I just wanted to say that the working group is not considering anything related to civil law. I'm looking at the language of the law right now that we passed, and it's specific to criminal statutes and any other related criminal laws. So that is not within the purview of the working group, the statute of limitations portion. I just wanted to quick say to Representative Lucero, too, it's my understanding from Minkoji that because of the contractual nature between the post board and the nonprofit entity that would be working with this data, that nonprofit entity is then subject to the provisions in Chapter 13. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Moeller. There being no other comments or questions from committee members regarding the provision, the motion from Chair Mariani is that House File 76, as amended, be recommended to be re-referred to Ways and Means. The committee legislative assistant will take the roll. Chair votes aye.
Representative Moeller.
Aye.
Representative Scott.
No.
Representative Albright.
No.
Representative Barr.
No.
Representative Cantrell.
Aye.
Representative Carlson. Representative Considine.
Aye.
Representative Hassan.
Aye.
Representative Herr.
Aye.
Representative Johnson.
No.
Representative Liebling.
Aye.
Representative Lucero.
No.
Representative Mariani.
Aye.
Representative Noor.
Aye.
Representative O'Neill.
No.
Representative Robbins.
No.
Representative Zhang.
Aye.
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Carlson was counted as an aye in that you have that, Ms. Mouse. On a vote of 11 ayes and 7 nays, the motion passes and the bill as amended is re-referred to Ways and Means. The next bill we have up on the calendar is House File 77, Reforming Accountability Package. Relevant provisions to our jurisdiction is the cash bail reform provisions, Representative Neuer, found in Section 8, lines 5.29 to 7.16. We'll be talking not about the policy of cash bail reform, but regarding our jurisdictional area on it as the Judiciary Committee. So that was confusing. Bear with me. Chair Representative Neuer moves that House File 77 be recommended to be re-referred to the Ways and Means Committee. Representative Mariani, please tell us about your bill. And Representative Mariani, we've got about 12 to 14 minutes for this. So if you could keep your comments restricted to a few minutes on this, or Representative Neuer could, that would be helpful.
Mr. Chair, very quickly, there are 5 major provisions on the Reforming Accountability Act. There's a use of form, force reform, which modifies the use of force deadly force standards. There's prosecutorial reform, which moves the prosecution of wrongful deaths, of deadly use of force resulting in wrongful death, or resulting in deaths, to the Attorney General's office. There's a corresponding piece here about strengthening our investigatory reform with the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension. Those 3 provisions will be covered in our conversation with public safety today. And then there's the final provision on cash bail reform, and I would defer to Representative Neuer at whatever point the chair wants.
Representative Neuer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is the same bill that we've had in the judiciary in the previous year. And this addresses the pretrial detentions where individuals who detained could be released on their own recognizance, and this is not something new that we are talking about. I know there's a question about how many people this will impact. From the preliminary data that I've received, this is a pretrial issue. Almost 1,000 people will be impacted in Minneapolis. I'm still collecting the data of how many people will this section impact. So, Mr. Chair, I'm ready to answer any question in regards to this provision.
Thank you. We have Representative Scott and Johnson. So go ahead, Chair Scott.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Neuer, I'm a little bit bewildered as to why this piece is part of what we're doing here regarding policing and accountability. This seems more like criminal justice reform. But that said, I do have concerns with this language. I know that these sorts of changes were done in New York City, and even self-proclaimed socialist Bill de Blasio has come out and is starting to walk back these provisions. And I think one of the cases there that happened was one of these people that was charged with a misdemeanor offense was let go again and went out and was, I believe, driving drunk and ended up killing a person. And what they found over and over again was that these people were just going out and recommitting offenses and not showing up to court afterwards. So I have great concerns about something to this extent. And you know, while there might be other parts of Chair Mariani's bill that we're supporting, because this poison pill is in there, I won't be able to support the bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Scott. Chair Johnson.
Chair Lesh, Representative Neuer. I've talked to a lot of prosecutors, both county and city prosecutors in greater Minnesota. Overall, they're not supporting this idea. And I know the city of Minneapolis prosecutor is in testifying in favor of it. And she never did give a really good reason why the prosecutor, who actually is the one who requests the bail, does not just do that on their own. Why does it, I wonder if you can ask why the City of Minneapolis prosecutor's office just does not request bail anymore on these warrants. I'm just wondering if you could answer that question.
Who's that question for, Chair Johnson?
Representative Knorr.
Go ahead, Representative Knorr.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think this is a matter of criminalization of poverty. For individuals who really can afford bail for anything, they will be released. But if somebody cannot afford $75 or $78 of bail, they will end up in jail. That may ruin their whole life. In fact, we are only addressing the Minnesota Rules of Criminal Procedures under 6.02. When you look at 6.01, release on citations, that specifically covers some of this issue. So it actually empowers for us to go out and say, this is not only a segment on pretrial, but we also want the peace officers to issue citation on site rather than having somebody to go to jail where they may even end up losing their lives, as we have seen. So this is more about providing people who committed misdemeanor cases. In fact, we're excluding DWI, domestic assault, we're excluding Danko, assault in fifth degree, and a list of others, because we want to make sure that those individuals have a process that the peace officer or the judiciary system can provide them a different pathway. But this is more about equity. It's about addressing the criminal justice. It's about addressing the policing, that we want to be able to give people that opportunity to be given a citation rather than just walking in jail.
Chair Lash, Representative
Johnson.
I understand that. But like I said, I've talked to prosecutors all over the state. They're wondering why we're doing this. But if the City of Minneapolis and their prosecutor's office want to do this, they can now. Is there, or unless there's a reason that they can't, do you know of any reason why they cannot do this now on their own?
I think this is because people have got their own piecemeal. That you may have somebody who may come in for different reasons. So we wanted to provide guidance that this covers the entire state, and individuals can address this issue based on their jurisdiction. But when you look at the data, the number of people who are impacted disproportionately are people of color, indigenous, and also looking at the same data, low-income individuals throughout the state, this is more about a choice. You know, people are making between letting somebody go or stay in jail. So we wanted to provide a guidance and say, anyone who is accused of misdemeanor, as long as they will show up in court, as long as they're not convicted of other crimes, they should be released on their own recognizance. We don't want somebody to lose their job. We don't want somebody to lose their life. We don't want people to be left out just because they committed a minor crime, to be told that they don't deserve to be let go because they cannot afford $100 or even less. So that's something that we're trying to address. The number of people that we incarcerate in our system, the imbalance that we've talked about during the interim, this addresses that core of that system, that we want to be able to address the significant challenges we have in our criminal justice system.
And Chair Johnson, I will say this. It's, like I said, it's not my habit to frequently weigh in on these bills before me, and it's not my style as chair. However, considering that I prosecuted this and I did this for 15 years, I can tell you two things. Number one, the uniform statewide standard. It was the same thing your side of the aisle pushed when you passed permit to carry reform. There are plenty of local jurisdictions across the state that could have liberalized their permit to carry policies if they chose to. You said, no, it's not good enough. We need a uniform standard across the state to apply for all of us. That's essentially what's being done here, to make sure everyone's treated the same no matter where they are, rather than one rogue jurisdiction going off on their own to do it. And it's fair because people are arrested across jurisdictions, the one they're not living in. Now, I prosecuted 10-day demands, which means if you can't make bail, $100, $200, $300, $500, you sit in jail for 10 days. By that time, you've already lost your job. you can't make rent in your apartment, you're homeless, you get your car repoed because you can't make a car payment. All this stuff trickles downhill on especially crimes that are not particularly serious that we shouldn't be have people held for. That does not do us a lot of good. So that's why I think it's important to have a uniform standard across the state, have directions. There are plenty of things that judges could fix on their own if they were going to go rogue in this state, but we give guidelines and guide rails for judges by offering legislation to make sure that happens. And that's what I think is being done here between Chair Mariani and Rep. Noor as well. I just wanted to offer that.
Chair Lesh, I can answer. Since Representative Noor doesn't actually know the correct answer for this, prosecutors across the state look at those issues. They set the bail and what is affordable. The judges do that as well. But one issue for going bailless, the city of Minneapolis cannot do this without, they could, but according to their charter, they cannot. In their charter 1.40, it says if you don't pay your fine, you shall be in prison. That's in their charter. They have to follow that. Also, a failure to appear on a warrant. They can't say just do a summons stuff. It says in their charter, they shall issue a warrant and you sit in jail until you pay your bail or go before the judge. So this is something the city of Minneapolis wants to do. If their prosecutors want to do this, they have to change their charter. And I don't think what the city of Minneapolis wants to do is what the city of Roseau might want to do, or the city of anywhere else in their prosecution. The prosecutors in my area and the ones I've talked to across the state, they look at the totality of the issue, and the bail is set at something. If they can't, somebody can't afford the bail that's set by the bail schedule. The judges and the prosecutors look at it and try to do what they can to help them to get out. But unfortunately, the city of Minneapolis cannot because of their charter.
Okay. I think the last comment we have is Representative Robbins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, members. I'm sympathetic with some of the bail reform efforts that are going on, but I've also, well before the terrible death of George Floyd, I did ride-alongs in my district, and the concern I have from the officers in my district is that people come in, particularly regarding retail theft, and there are small amounts of things stolen, and then the people who are apprehended know the law quite well and say, oh, you know, you can't put me in jail, you can't arrest me, and they give them the citation and they go away, and then sometimes within 24 hours they're back doing the same thing, and it's regular, and honestly this was told to me by three different officers in three different cities just when I asked what is the main frustration or tell me about your things that you wish we could work on at the legislature. And so So one thing I would like to do is just ask if there's any data that this provision will collect on if we go to a no cash bail system across the state. I don't see any provisions in here to track the data on how many do show up for their court date versus how many don't. And then what happens if they don't? Are there warrants? And you know, so I'd like to see if this is going to be passed, some tracking of how this plays out in the real world. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Robbins. Did you want to give a quick answer to that, Representative Noor?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think those are issues that we can look into, but then when you look at the section 6.01, if there's any further criminal conduct will occur, that is also a reason to detain the individual. Not only giving them the citation. So repeat offense that is showing an indication that you're not heeding the process that we're putting forward. So I think we need to go back to the roots of the whole process. When we do have the Minnesota Rules of Criminal Procedure. I think it's upon us to make sure that the legal system works equally and equitably for everybody. So this is going to be something that we will be putting more efforts to it coming session. Thanks.
Thank you, Rep. Nora.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would just like to encourage that you do some data tracking on how this plays out. Thank you.
Thank you, Rep. Robbins. There being no other comments from the committee or testimony, the motion on House File 77 is that it be recommended to be re-referred to the Ways and Means Committee. The committee legislative assistant will take the roll on the bill. Chair votes aye.
Representative Moeller.
Aye.
Representative Scott.
No.
Representative Albright.
No.
Representative Barr.
No.
Representative Cantrell.
Aye.
Representative Carlson. Representative Considine.
Aye.
Representative Hassan.
Aye.
Representative Herr.
Aye.
Representative Johnson.
No.
Representative Liebling.
Aye.
Representative Lucero.
No.
Representative Mariani.
Aye.
Representative Noor.
Yes.
Representative O'Neill.
No.
Representative Robbins.
No.
Representative Zhang.
Aye.
On a vote of 11 ayes and 7 nays, the motion passes and the bill is re-referred to Ways and Means. Our next bill is House File 78, Chair Mariani, the Reimagining Public Safety Package. Relevant provisions to our jurisdictions are public safety peer-to-peer counseling, CISM, and use of force report, sections 1 and section 6 of the bill. We will also be reviewing an amendment which provides access to the data that's not otherwise public data, the A1 amendment. Representative Kunesh Padin, Critical Incident Review Board. This amendment creates access to data otherwise not public, subdivision 4, lines 3.1 to 3.12, subdivision 6, lines 3.23 to 3.25, and subdivision 8, 4.11 to 4.27. Representative Noor moves that House File 78 be recommended to be re-referred to the Ways and Means. We have the First Amendment, the A1. Chair Mariani, I'm sorry. So who's offering the A1? Representative Moeller? Go ahead, Representative Moeller.
Thank you. And just to be clear, this is the Officer Involved Death Review Board Amendment, Mr. Chair. Yep. Okay, great. So this is Representative Kunesh Podine's bill that is in House File 78 currently, and it was also Representative Fisher's bill prior to that. The purpose overall is to review officer-involved deaths by collecting, reviewing, and analyzing data surrounding each death. This amendment really clarifies the purpose of this review board, the participants, and the duties, including data review and reporting.
I'm not hearing anything.
Go ahead. Please proceed, Rep. Moeller.
Okay. I will note that this amendment is modeled after the Domestic Fatality Review Board and also has some feedback from the Department of Public Safety, specifically the BCA. I'll also just make a note here that Representative O'Neill had asked when we talked about the first bill about looking at an officer.
I can see your lips moving, but I still can't hear anything.
Representative Considine, go ahead and work out your technical difficulties on your own or with a member of the staff. Please proceed, Representative Moeller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So the question she had had before was about reviewing what an officer's training had been in the past, and this review board would do just that. I guess I'll leave it at that, and I'll also note that Representative Kunesh-Podein is here, too, to answer any questions that the committee has.
Thank you. Questions from members for Representative Mueller or Representative Kunesh-Podein? Representative O'Neill.
Mr. Chair, I actually had my hand up in the previous bill, so I'll pass.
I apologize.
I had a question for Representative O'Neill.
I apologize for that, Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Chair Scott.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess this question would be for Representative Kunesh-Podein. She's there. So if any data would happen to leak out, I mean, you look at the kind of data that this group of people is going to be looking at, and I'm not sure this provision would ever make it through the data commission, just because there's so much sensitive information that this board is going to be reviewing. And so my question is what happens if there's a leak of any of this data? How do we find out who's responsible for that leak?
Representative Kunesh-Podein.
Well, good morning, members. Representative, that would be something that we were going to have to deal with as time goes by. There's often times when data is leaked in different ways. And so I would assume that we would follow the trail, and those that were the ones that shared data that should not be shared for would be held accountable.
Mr. Chair. What trail are you going to follow? What provision is there in here that creates a trail that would be followed? Representative Kunesh-Podein.
I think you can tell from the bill that has not been included in the bill, and would be something that we would definitely need to continue working on as we create this very powerful set of bills for police and accountability.
Representative Mueller.
Maybe I could help here, Mr. Chair, Representative Scott. So this, like I said, is modeled after domestic violence fatality review teams, almost, pretty very, very similarly. So I'll have to look into what happens in those cases, but this language is really modeled right after that. Now, having said that, if you think there needs to be some clarification around that, I'm happy to work with you on that. And I know Representative Kunesh-Podein is as well.
Chair Scott.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And once again, this is a little bit different board than following up on the domestic violence folks. This is dealing with people that are public employees, and the data is treated differently. So that needs to be addressed. It's not addressed in this. And so once again, we need audit trails, we need role-based access, because if any of this sensitive information is ever leaked out, it needs to be accounted for. The people that leak it out need to be held accountable. So that's my comment for now, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Scott. Are there any other comments from folks on the... Let's see, we're here on the A1, right? Okay, so we're gonna vote on the A1. All in favor of the A1 amendment to House File 78, signify by saying aye.
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 All opposed to the A1 amendment, signify by saying no.
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 No. The amendment passes to the bill. Representative Mariani, please tell us to your bill.
Mr. Chair, I think there's another amendment.
There is. The A2 amendment. Representative Noor, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The A2 amendment removes the CISM, which is the critical incident stress management, and it keeps the current peer-to-peer counseling in place. We're working with stakeholders to make sure that we have we incorporate everything that was discussed excuse me, during the weekend. So that's what it does in this bill.
Thank you. Are there questions from members about the A2? I don't see any. Representative O'Neill. Go ahead, Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate you calling on me. Representative Noor, we, in the very long Public Safety Committee hearing we had on Saturday, I spoke very highly of this section. It seemed like a really good part of the bill, peer-to-peer counseling that was confidential. I guess I don't really understand your explanation as to why you would take out what at least my side of the aisle thinks is a really good portion of this bill. Is it just not complete? Is it not ready? I don't understand exactly your reason to take it out.
Representative Noor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think I've been working with Vice Chair Mola, if she wanted to jump in on this segment. We've been working with many stakeholders to make sure that the bill is in a shape that will address some of the challenges. I know there have been some concern, Mr. Chair.
Representative Mueller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Noren O'Neill. This is a really important piece still to us, but as we were working through this language, and if you'll remember, this was a bill that I brought back during the regular session, and we had a committee hearing on it, and we did an amendment. We held on to it because we were still working on language. We continued to work on the language even after that session ended, and we still haven't been able to make sure that it's narrowly crafted so that we're not allowing any officers to sort of hide behind the peer counseling or the CISM, that we really want this focused on assisting them in any first responders with getting the kind of, trauma response that's needed. So we just need a little more crafting. The stakeholders are continuing to meet, and I'm really hopeful that we'll be able to bring it back with even better language.
Thank you. Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Do you have a timeline? Is it something that we hope to see before we're done with these packages, or is it going to take longer than that, do you think, Representative Mueller?
I'm hoping some of the stakeholders are actually meeting this afternoon. And I'm really hoping we're really close to language. So I'm hopeful that we can even get some language drafted by the end of today.
Thank you. Chair Johnson.
Chair Lesh, the author of the amendment, I'm actually disappointed that you're pulling this out. If you're working on it, it should stay in. Because to make sure that it's corrected to the, and the stakeholders do work on it and get it done before it becomes to the floor. This is actually one of the few things in these bills that's actually following what the Deadly Force Task Force actually proposed. So I'm just disappointed, and it was one of the few things in this bill that I actually supported. So like I say, I'm disappointed with this. I know you're going to pass it. You're going to pass it off. So it's rather frustrating for our side of the aisle. I'll stop at that.
Thank you, Chair Johnson. All in favor of the A2 amendment, signify by saying aye.
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 All opposed, say no.
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 The motion does prevail, and the amendment is adopted. Representative Noor, any final comments? I'm sorry. Any final discussion on the bill as amended by anyone? Chair Scott.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thanks for the opportunity to just kind of wind things up here or wind things down. I appreciate everybody's work on this, and the reason we're here is a really tragic reason, and I don't think anybody in this committee in the legislature would argue with that. We what we saw happen to Mr. Floyd was without excuse. My concern has always been when I heard inklings that we were going to start working on rewriting some of this, policing issues, was that we not, A, have a knee-jerk reaction in light of how quickly after this event with Mr. Floyd took place that we're working on this. I really felt that there needed to be more of a cooling down period before we took this up. And I'm not talking about a year. I'm talking about a few weeks. And I feel like, now we're trying to rush through a bunch of legislation. And when I look at this legislation, a lot of it I see is really should be tailor-made to each specific law enforcement agency where practicable. And I believe that the city of Minneapolis seems to be the agency with the most troublesome kind of record of these sorts of events and reputation. And I would reference, and I know we can't do this because we're not in committee and I didn't want to print this whole thing out, but there was a study done, I believe is by the University of, Columbia University in 1997, and it was a nationwide study. Minneapolis was one of the cities that they looked at, and it had to do with racial relations. It had to do with abuse of force by police. And there were several recommendations made at that time out of that 1997 report. At the time, it was Mayor Sales Belton, and she is quoted in that report as saying, yes, there's a problem here. And so I think what we need to be looking at here is we need to be looking at, yes, this officer and group of officers, there's blame, plenty of blame to go around there, but there's also plenty of blame to go around for the mayors and the subsequent city councils of the city of Minneapolis who knew what these problems were and did nothing. They did nothing. And they still have the power over what the policing policies are in their own city. And so now I see that this city council in Minneapolis, once again, is kicking the can down the road. They're going to wait an entire year now before they make any decisions. And I understand that I think that they're trying to walk back the fact that they said, oh, we're going to defund the police or get rid of the police. And they heard from their communities that the members in their community are like, no, that's not what we want. We want the police. We just think that there's some work that needs to be done. And so I feel like a lot of what these bills are doing is addressing things that is going to apply to all of this state when there's really a couple of agencies within our state that really have the problem. And so for that reason, that's why I'm not supporting a lot of these, is because I don't think they need so many of these measures are some of the things that police agencies are already doing. And then I look at the work that was done by the Attorney General and Commissioner Harrington, and not all of those recommendations are part of this. Very few are. So I feel like, again, this is a knee-jerk reaction to a problem that exists most broadly in a couple of entities, and those are the entities that have work to do within their own city councils and mayoralships. And this is far too broad, and that's why I can't support it. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you for your comments, Chair Scott. I see no other comments from members on the final bill as amended. Representative Hassan. And I ask members to keep in mind that we have session in 8 minutes. Representative Hassan.
Sorry, guys, I'm having problems unmuting this.
Enter your PIN ID followed by pound.
That's not me. I just want to highlight something that was echoed
by a couple of people earlier that this is a problem for Minneapolis. And to think that police brutality and the attack on Black men is a Minneapolis problem, I think that is an inaccurate information, and we should correct that. The problem that's happening nationwide is not a Minneapolis issue. There are plenty of other issues. Philando Castillo was killed by Mendota Heights, if I'm not mistaken. Falcon Heights police officer. Isaac Adden was killed by Egan and Bloomington police. 30 shots on a kid. So this is not a Minneapolis problem, and we should not shape it that way. We shouldn't make this problem a Minneapolis problem. It's a nationwide problem. It's a statewide problem, and we should not focus on Minneapolis. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other comments from members of the committee regarding House File 78 as amended? Seeing none, then the committee will proceed to a vote on House File 78 as amended. The motion is that it be recommended to be re-referred as amended to the Ways and Means Committee. The committee legislative assistant will take the roll. Chair votes aye.
Representative Moeller.
Aye.
Representative Scott.
No.
Representative Albright.
No.
Representative Barr.
No.
Representative Cantrell.
Aye.
Representative Carlson. Representative Considine.
Aye.
Representative Hassan.
Aye.
Representative Herr.
Aye.
Representative Johnson.
No.
Representative Liebling.
Aye.
Representative Lucero.
No.
Representative Mariani.
Yes.
Representative Knorr.
Aye.
Representative O'Neill.
Evenings will be the best time.
Representative O'Neill.
No.
Representative Robbins.
No.
Representative Zhang.
Yes.
On a vote of 11 ayes and 7 nays, the motion passes and the bill as amended is re-referred to Ways and Means. Members, we don't have any other pending business before the committee has noticed at this time. Please be on the lookout in your emails for details, because we will probably have other remote hearings during this special session. But as it stands now, this hearing of the Judiciary, Finance, and Civil Law Committee is adjourned.